I'm David.
And I'm Matt.
And you're listening to the Mastering Mondays podcast. Welcome back to the Mastering Mondays podcast, brought to you by No More Bad Mondays. Today, we're thrilled to have Kevin McDonald join us. Kevin is a Microsoft MVP and his expertise in digital workspaces makes him the perfect guest to discuss how organizations can leverage AI and Microsoft technology to achieve their goals. So let's dive in. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you very much for having me. It's nothing like those intros to kind of feel your head swell up slightly.
It's great to have you here. Could you start off by telling us a little bit more about your journey? How did you get here? How did you become this kind of respected figure in the Microsoft community and kind of be engaged in everything that you're doing? Can you just explain your journey a bit?
Kind of started in IT. I was recently giving at a conference in Bletchley Park at the National Museum of Computing, and they had my favorite first computer, the Acorn Electron, on there. So kind of learning basic, learning about what computers were, that kind of continued through school and things. And when it came to university, I was doing engineering, but realized I love spending more time on the computers. I also kind of realized I quite like having money as well. So when the kind of job rounds came round, there was lots of IT jobs in investment banks. So I sold my soul for a little while, did the graduate program through there. And somewhere along that way, I got dragged into a project server project, which kind of brought me into the world of SharePoint. And it kind of, what really resonated with me about SharePoint was you could help people to help themselves. I loved that. You know, it was always very nice doing development and other projects where you had to get a whole list of requirements. But if you could enable people to do them things themselves, it was so much better from there. So it kind of built a love of SharePoint that continued across different roles. And at the same time, I was then learning from other people, people like Jeremy Fake, Mark Anderson, and it still makes me smile having met these people and chatted with them now and speak to them quite a lot because they inspired me by their sharing and what they did. Andrew Connell's another great one from there. And it kind of got me thinking about how I can get out into the community and share more as well. So as I went through different jobs and roles, looked at opportunities to start speaking. The Collab 365 team used to run, I think once they ran a whole 24-hour virtual conference, which having done that myself was absolutely nuts from there as well. And it kind of got me inspired into doing more and more from things. Then I moved over from the kind of financial services side over to consulting and various roles, especially where I worked with a lovely gentleman called Al Erdley, who kind of coached me towards, right, if you want to get into that community speaking, here's what you need to do. Here's, don't just kind of pitch things out there. Here's where your focus gets from it. So that kind of got me into the community speaking side, and which eventually through the pandemic led me to becoming an MVP, because then I could just pop into my little office and go and speak to people all around the world, as opposed to kind of leaving my family for days on end. The only downside for my family is it kind of got me into the community and getting into these conferences. So when the pandemic did end, it's kind of got me hooked on traveling around the world, going to conferences and things from there. And that's given me the opportunity to kind of speak and learn more. And what has got me there, the kind of passion of I will always have a laptop after I finish work. I can continue tapping away with various other things and kind of expanding what I know on there, trying new things out, getting hands on. And then I try and share that as much as possible.
I want to hit you with quite a deep question quite early on here. But given your extensive experience, what do you believe are the most pressing challenges organizations are facing in this kind of digital transformation, and how can Microsoft technologies help address these challenges?
So I've got in my head the kind of nice Microsoft flashy answer that's all about AI within there, which is kind of the obvious one within there. But I think the challenge that I feel has disappeared a little bit as well is employee experience, actually listening to employees, making sure what matters, making sure they understand what matters to you as an organization and what part they can play in that. One of the other big things I look at is Fever goals and the use of OKRs and how they align people with that. But I would say that challenge across both, because I think they come together a little bit. Making sure you have a strategy, a focus on what you're doing, and making sure that everyone else is brought along with that. And that is where it does play into AI. I think AI is something that all organizations need to think about. They need to have a plan for. They need to build out a strategy to help do that. It's one of the things I've been talking a lot about with how Copilot can play a core part to that. If you don't have a strategy, if you haven't told people how you're planning to use AI, if you haven't brought that responsible AI into it as well, making sure that people know what tools can be used, but also to make sure they're using them in appropriate ways, that you're not kind of losing out when you're hiring people by having AI filter out CVs incorrectly. It may be inherently taking in your bias that you've already applied. It may be ignoring things there. So building out your strategy that as people are adopting this AI, they're considering all these different things, the security, building out your digital core to actually make use of it. And so to answer the second part of it there, what can Microsoft do with it? It's a nice, easy one-word answer for that, which is Copilot. It's not the answer to everything. It's not, hey, turn on Copilot and it's going to solve all your woes. You should be looking at what those challenges are and working out what the different areas. The way I see Copilot becoming and evolving is it's your experience layer for all that AI you can bring. You can extend your M365 Copilot. You can bring in other systems and other bits of knowledge in that. You can now with agents connect and take actions. So you can do things like book leave. You can raise a request for a new job role. You can connect into your own individual systems from there. All from that single layer. And you don't, I wouldn't say you don't have to worry about telling people what they can do, but it becomes easier because instead of needing to know, do I go to this system? Do I go over to there? Payroll and pay slips, always the problem I found with intranets. Does that sit within HR or finance? And it always seems to change within companies. So trying to remember where you filter through that and searching takes you off to someone's pay slip because they haven't set the permissions, right? So now with Copilot and having that kind of single layer, yes, ignoring the price at this page, at this point of it, but assuming you can kind of see the value of that and demonstrate it, then you can go in and ask that question and allow that to point you towards the right place without you having to know. And that can bring everything together into that one layer. So that's how you can help build your AI strategy into one place, one seamless way of connecting to all the different AI portions that you bring in there.
Thanks, Kevin. You mentioned there about Copilot agents. AI agents have the potential to revolutionize various aspects of business. Could you perhaps explain a bit more about what they are and what purpose do they serve?
That's a very interesting question, because one of the things I hate about technologists is they love to jump on a bandwagon and a phrase on their AI, and Gen AI was obviously one of them. Everything became AI. I think the latest one is everything is an agent. So probably 3 or 4 weeks ago, if you'd asked me what an agent was, I'd have a slightly different story to now within there. But if we take it as a generic way, it's something that you can engage with, often in chat, but could also be connected to other triggers, connected to something happening, an email arriving, some form of trigger of something happening. And there is a Gen AI powered agent, I was trying to not say thing there, that will take action. And you can define with that, you can have a whole series of agents, but you can define some personality instructions to the agent. But don't imagine instructions like if this, do that, if this, do that, if this, do that. You can kind of say, you're an agent, you're there to analyze my emails and identify from those which of these could potentially be a new opportunity for work for us. And if that's the case, then I wanted you to speak to the opportunity agents to kind of capture the information that needs to log it into your CRM system. So you can start to define all these individual blocks that can help you. And what I love about the idea of agents, and again, that kind of Copilot experience as a layer there, is you don't need to kind of say, hey, CRM agent, or hey, blah, blah, blah agent. You can just say what you want. And then the AI underneath that will kind of bring in the appropriate agent at the appropriate time from within there.
So could we think about them almost like, when we're defining an agent, defining a job role?
I knew you were going to say that. Yes and no. And the reason I'm very hesitant, I talked before about responsible AI. The second you start talking about agents in that role, in that way, everyone goes, they're going to take my job from that. And not entirely unfairly. To my view, you're defining the reactions of the way that those things will work to happen in specific roles, rather than necessary job roles, I would say. There's roles that they need to undertake. I think in the early days of agents evolving, I think we will naturally see them fit within job roles. But hopefully, as we get more advanced with these, we'll see them almost at a layer below that of where they're good within that. Because I've seen some talk of things of being a project manager agent, for example. Now, the reality of a project manager is they will do things like put tasks in a plan, make sure those tasks are kept up to date, make nag people to update their timesheets. Now, each of those could be individual agents. The reality of good project managers, and there's plenty of those out there, despite some may disagree, is that they actually kind of encourage people. They pull all these things together. They have that understanding of what all these things matter about, where the focus is, where the prioritization is. And that kind of thing, an agent is a long, long way away from doing if ever it's going to get to that point. So the functional parts of a job role, yes, I can see this automating, but that will mean that the more emotional parts, the parts that add that human value, will still be very, very strong within there as well. So it's going to be a case of us people adapting to make the most of these tools rather than them replacing jobs directly.
So in terms of collaboration, of course, we're only a couple of weeks since Copilot Wave 2 came out. And one of the announcements within that was Copilot Pages, which is about collaboration. Can you explain a little bit about what Copilot Pages is and how it might streamline, for example, content creation or collaboration more generally?
So one of the things I'd say about Microsoft announcements is there's what's actually announced, and then there's the attitude of where it's actually going as well. And I, to me, Pages is more about that latter part. So I'll start with what it is. When it comes to kind of Copilot, and we're talking about M365 Copilot here, you can go and ask it a prompt, and it will return that information. That could be grounded on your data, grounded on web data. So I could go and ask it, explain to me the benefits of listening to No More Bad Mondays, and it would come up with some lovely benefits of learning more and increasing that information. And maybe David and Matt, you're both talking about that, and you want to kind of build that into a proposal. With Copilot Pages, when you get that prompt back, there's a little nice button that says kind of bring it to Pages. I should remember exactly what it is. I think it's add to pages on there. And that effectively, for those technical people out there, will create a loop page within there where you can go and collaborate on that content. So it takes that prompt and puts it there, and then you can evolve that. So maybe one of the points of you learn about No More Bad Mondays through listening at the right time. And you may say, right, could you explain to me some options of how people and where people would listen to it or watch it on there? And it would use Copilot to go and add that additional information. Maybe if you take another example, one we've been talking about is when you're running RFPs or building a proposal within your company, and you may have that initial idea, build a proposal to roll out Copilot, for example. And then you want to flesh out one of the things you need to focus on is adoption. And you might have a lot of content internally about how you can do that adoption. It can bring that content in, but you can tag other people. So I could tag the both of you and say, could you pick up this area? Could you pick up this area? Now, the reality is you're not gonna do a proposal and share that as loop. We're a long way away from doing that. But I think that evolution, that message is start with that one Copilot, start from that single area, then bring other people in, and then you can evolve to the right area, whether that's a Word document, whether that's a PowerPoint, whether that's a meeting that needs to take place. You started to move towards a collaborative area where you can work together to get those goals from that initial start point.
How should organizations, I just want to touch back on, you know, you said in earlier on when we were talking about challenges, about organizations kind of, you know, getting to grips with AI, having a strategy for it, et cetera, a digital plan. How should organizations approach responsible AI development and deployment?
I always feel slightly bad in this one, but you know, speak to some experts, I would say, on that. It's a kind of quick, easy one. And lo and behold, a consultant's suggesting speaking to consultants. Who would have thought on there? But I genuinely think that there is an area of here of people who've lived that world, who've gone through it, are getting more and more experience from it. So I think there's a huge benefit from that. But you obviously want to get people started and thinking about things from there. So I think, understand with the responsible AI, what are your red lines? What are things that you want to make sure that people don't do within there? If we look at things like ChatGPT in the early days, there's the story of things like Samsung within there of using ChatGPT, but they didn't have the enterprise data protection. So when they were searching for things that were related and putting comments in there were related to sensitive materials, that went into the training model and started appearing for other people from there. So one of the responsible areas is make sure people know what to use when. Make sure you're putting the right compliance and details within there so you're securing your data in the right way. And I would say to that as well, secure your data in the right way, not just in terms of what you're using with AI, but you know, things as basic as putting your SharePoint permissions, having governance plans and areas within that. But then where you're looking to evolve and think about how you're using that AI, really ask if this comes out into the press and the press start talking about this, I won't mention certain newspapers that will probably jump on things more than others. But if they jump on this, how will this look to the average person? And if you feel that this would sound really bad, it probably is within there. So if you're talking about analyzing people, I was chatting with someone today. One of the ideas I have for AI way back was a facial recognition system that would kind of count registration. So you could use it for clubs, churches, things like that. People who want to kind of count numbers, that you could do that. The reality is people would feel very freaked out by that. Are you kind of tracking me? Are you watching me? It's almost that sniff test to it that says, is this a good idea? And if you feel it's not, flag it and investigate and go into that as well. So thinking about how your data, how that can be surfaced, where that's going to be used, think about, are you doing the right thing? Is this AI actually adding responsible, ethical ways of doing things within there? And I would also say, you know, think about the impacts to humans from that as well. We were talking just now about kind of cutting jobs and things on there. Think about what that means. We know there's been many companies have gone, yeah, we got Gen AI. We can cut thousands of jobs within there. Really realize what the impact of that is. I think we've been naive to say it's not going to cut jobs, but really understand that. Don't just go, right, I've got Copilot. I only need a tenth of the number of people to deliver these things within there. Understand the value that's bringing in. Understand what those people can offer with that as well. Look at it as opportunities for growth.
Is there a responsibility for Microsoft and other AI providers to consider how their AIs operate? So given your example there of you're saying I want to count people and thinking I want to count people and I'm going to instruct the AI to use image recognition to do that. Well, of course, we're not that far away of just saying, can you just count people? And I don't care how you do it. You know, use your intelligence to count them as you see fit. So you know, as we get more reliant on these AIs, the methodology that they might use might not be something that we even consider.
Trying to work out the best way to go to that. Well, I'm going to pick the first thing you said there about there. You know, is it Microsoft's responsibility to put these things in? A little bit. But it's all of our responsibilities to it. So if you're implementing a system, it's for you to ask, yes, I could do this with the system. Is it the right thing to do? It's also our responsibilities. If we take that face tracking example, if you don't like it, damn well tell people about it. Say, I'm not comfortable with this. If people don't speak out, then things will just go ahead. And everyone go, yeah, it's okay. Everything's fine. We don't mind about that. You know, social media companies and things like that, we're kind of being pushed towards just accepting selling our data. If you're comfortable with that, and I generally am, depending on the kind of where it's being used. But if you're not, then stop, you know, vote with your feet, move away from these things, explain why you're doing it as much as possible, and make sure people are clear on that as well. So going back also to should Microsoft do that, I think they do a pretty good job at doing that. That example I gave of the facial recognition, I can't actually do at the moment because if I want to use facial recognition systems that Microsoft has within Azure, I need to apply and explain how I'm doing that as well and give the details. Now, I could say I'm planning to do it for something that sounds very worthy and then use it for other things on there. To me, that's then my responsibility. I don't personally don't believe it's Microsoft's responsibility to follow up guaranteeing I am doing that. They're well within their rights when they find out I'm not using it for that purpose to kind of cut it away from there. And I think they're doing a pretty good job at opening that to the right thing. Not always. I won't get into politics, but I know there's kind of been certain political areas where both Google and Microsoft and others have kind of allowed the use of their technology in certain areas that many people are kind of a little uncomfortable with on there. But generally, I think they're doing a pretty good job about considering that from there. But yeah, I do think it's all about... It frustrates me a lot when I hear people kind of say, well, Microsoft should be doing this, Microsoft should be doing that, and we should be working together to help Microsoft to do those things and be honest. And that's as an end user, it's an implementer, it's a developer, as well as Microsoft's themselves. If they don't listen, it's a different story. Then you can whinge a bit louder. But we should be looking to help, not just expecting them to do everything for us.
Just want to briefly, really briefly touch on something you said before. So we were talking about, you know, implementing all of this and you mentioned about using a consultant potentially. You know, you're a consultant, we're consultants as well, and we very much, all of us have helped organizations in one way or another with this. Plenty of our guests are also consultants. But obviously we live in a world as well where, you know, YouTube is readily available and there's plenty of places that people can go off, organizations in theory could go off and learn to some degree a lot of this stuff. Is that a safe thing to do when we're talking about things like AI, or should there be, you know, should we always look to seek advice from experts before kind of going off and thinking, yeah, you know, I've ticked all those boxes? And obviously I know kind of the initial answer might be, well, we're consultants, so definitely come see a consultant. But is that right, or could people without kind of any true expert do all this themselves?
Oh, that's a horrible question to ask a consultant, especially because I'm honest, you know, I've lived both worlds. So I started off on the other side of the fence. And I'll be honest, I hated consultants at the time because I felt exactly as you sort of said there, probably before YouTube days, but I can go and read a manual. I can get hands on. I mentioned I love opening up a laptop. I can get expert in this fairly quickly and I don't need you to do all this for me from there. And even before I moved over consultancy, I definitely moved away from that position. I think if you have a good consultant who has that expertise, they're more likely to have done it more times than you have. They're more likely to have done things like that. When you're embedded within a company, you will do it once, maybe twice. Migrations are a great example. A horrible, horrible thing to do, but a great example from this. Consultants would have gone through 10, 20 migrations through their kind of life cycle, not just as individuals, but as a company as well. They will build from that experience and bring that experience. And, you know, we've got a lot of people in the community who share that knowledge as well, but you don't always share everything. Not intentionally, but more, oh yeah, I forgot. Yeah, that's a good point. I did that once that you've got there, that implicit knowledge that you forget about. And that's what you get from consultants. And also consultants, they learn not just from their mistakes, but from other people's mistakes. Consultants do make mistakes, even if we sometimes claim not in the sales process. But you learn from what others, when people come to you, there's oftentimes they come to you because of something's gone wrong. And they need some help with working from that. So you bring the different side to it from there as well. However, I would say make sure you understand it enough to catch out consultants and some of the BS that can go around. Making sure you have enough understanding to not necessarily implement it, but to kind of add that validation on the implementation is absolutely true. Not quite a consultancy story, but I loved it. I moved to one company as a project manager. And I could tell all the techie guys were like, oh, it's another project manager. And he came to me and started talking to me about SharePoint and sort of patronizing me slightly. Hello, Ryan, if you happen to be listening. And talking to these other things. And he said, and there's this thing called limits. And I was like, well, no, you've got limits and boundaries. So you can go across those, you know, you can breach those, but you can't breach that. And we could go over that a little bit as long as we bring it back down. And just this kind of look of panic on his face is like, I'm not going to be able to hoodwink this one. Damn. So, and I think that's what people should do if they're using consultancies. Make sure you have enough knowledge to make sure that you are safe and you're speaking the right language.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's in some ways easy to find the answer to kind of a particular thing that you might want to do, but what you're probably not getting at the same time, unless you've got the experience of doing that, is what happens to something else, that other kind of bit that's working off the back of that. Or, you know, so, you know, the Power Automate is a classic example. I've done, you know, quite a lot with Power Automate in Microsoft Teams, for example, and then I kind of make an adjustment in Teams and then suddenly that Automate stops working. And, you know, that's me as a consultant making those mistakes. And I think you can often kind of like narrowly look at what you want to do and you can achieve that. But if you aren't conscious of everything else around it, then often mistakes can be made, you know, and things go wrong. So no, I totally agree. Based on your experience, what's one piece of advice you'd give to a business or an educational institution looking to make the most of the Microsoft ecosystem? This hasn't necessarily got to be AI related, but what's the one piece of advice you'd give to someone?
It's a simple one to say, but a hard one to implement. Work out what on earth you actually want. Don't just go and switch on Copilot. Don't just go and switch on Viva. Don't just go and switch on whatever the latest thing is. Work out what your true challenges are and work out the most appropriate tool that can go from that within it. It's very easy just to go and look at these things. But I find that one of my biggest frustrations from the pandemic is we moved a lot of people to Teams, and they just move to Teams and they run meetings and do the odd chat. They haven't looked at their collaborative processes. They haven't looked at how they can work in an asynchronous way. They haven't looked at beyond and looked at the ways they're working to improve that and how they can restructure the organization, how they can think about the organization to work most effectively together. It drives me mad that not everyone is using Viva Goals, because everyone should be looking, you know, what is our objective? How do we measure success towards that? That's not about using Viva Goals. It's about thinking about those steps and those processes. So don't think just about the technology. Think about what you're looking to achieve and the suitable technology that's used for that as well. And don't just take what's off the shelf. Don't just build something from scratch. Look at using the combination of both aligned to what you're looking to achieve as well. I think that is the most important thing.
I think I couldn't agree more with that. Teams is so underutilized. I actually use it for a small business I run that, you know, uses frontline license, which is dirt cheap. Everybody just uses Teams for absolutely their entire work life. You know, the way they talk, the way they clock in and out via shifts, the way they, you know, their time is managed, the way they communicate, all their updates, you know, the way they log everything, that their entire life is through Teams. And most places they use third party pieces of software to cover this stuff off, and they lose all of the benefits of having one collaborative space.
And I'd say, even if you are using other things, I'm biased on Microsoft, but use Teams to bring that together. Okay, maybe you're using Slack. Use Slack as that kind of central point, but have one place for people to go and then bring the benefits of the other things where that value is. So you're not kind of going, oh, I need to go over to Salesforce to kind of log this HR ticket. Oh, and then I need to go to ServiceNow to log this IT ticket. Make it easy for people. You know, it comes back to that comment I had about employee experience. Make it easy for the challenges you have within that.
Could I ask you, could you share a particular memorable project you've worked on? You know, what were the key challenges? How did you leverage Microsoft technology? What was the outcome that made this particularly memorable for you?
Oh, I need some thought on that one. It's funny when you say things like that, the first ones that come back are the worst ones. I'm trying not to think. Maybe I'll touch on that worst one briefly, which was a migration project for it, and did involve was it 2.2 million items in a single documents in a single library, no folders from on premise, and we need to move it to online. And why was it so painful? Because I misjudged it, if I'm honest. I kind of flagged as a risk that having that number of items, you've completely breached. We may find things don't work as expected. And we kind of tried a little bit and it kind of worked. Then we scale it up and it didn't work. So I was like, oh, okay, we'll run a quick script that will just tidy up the data. Oh, hang on, that's tidied up the wrong data. Oh, hang on, let's run another one to fix it. Oh, hang on, this is going to take, I think at one point we had a script that was going to run for 7 months if we'd left it at the rate it was going. Okay, we need to rewrite this. And it was just kind of, do a bit more. And I just got stuck into that view of it that was particularly painful, and always assumed that next time it would be better. And it wasn't. And we got there. We got there in the end. We did manage to move all the things. We had script after script. I learned a hell of a lot. I learned how we can bring the kind of limits of Excel. We had to bin that and move everything to SQL Server. I learned about huge performance increases on what we could do with PowerShell and PMP PowerShell, how to do it the right way versus the wrong way, batching things up. So what I learned from it was fantastic. But yeah, the scars I have were painful from that one. But then I'd say another a really good project kind of in a similar sort of time where we were doing a full digital transformation. And what I got to do was sit down and chat to people about what mattered. I got to talk things about how teams could help, how we could bring Power Apps in and Power Automate to help automate processes. And I love those ones where you get to sit and kind of explain to people not just what the tools can do, but what processes could change within that and the difference you can make. And we made a real difference. And we had KPIs that measured that as well. So that was probably the flip side of where it worked nicely as well to it.
As a speaker that goes around the world speaking, as you've mentioned already, what advice would you give to others who want to share their knowledge and expertise with the broader community? So all the people out there at home that are going, I know a thing or two about Microsoft. How do I shout about it? What do you suggest?
Don't get married. sorry, I said that loud.
Brilliant.
Sorry if my wife's listening upstairs. I mean, joking aside, I put that more seriously. Determine your priorities. Do things and make sure you discuss those with those special to you and those close to you within that. It is a constant challenge of where I'd love to go and travel and see all the world, but I have three kids all at school and a wife who can't handle all of them all in one go for too long. So balancing out those, and I would say I've got a very demanding job within there. So balancing out your time and making sure it's definitely something you want to do. Probably the bigger, more practical one is start speaking to others who do speak. Build that community. I for years kind of assumed that things would just happen. But the reality was I got a lot more into community when I started chatting to other people, understanding what it was like. You kind of learn from them more about the advantages. You learn the right things to do, you know, where to pitch yourself. For years, I was kind of trying to get into ESPC and speak at Ignite with no speaking history. And funnily enough, I didn't get selected. So kind of knowing where you can pitch your things, get involved if you're part of that community, you kind of learn from it, from that as well. And it also makes it a hell of a lot more fun. It means you turn up to events. I'm smiling because it's my happy place. I turn up to a conference. I see people I haven't seen for 6 months, even a couple of years. We have hugs. We chat. And you feel like you're part of your tribe on there. So find that tribe that's out there. Find those people. Build with that technology and that group. And you'll find things just skyrocket from there. And by the flip side, if you don't find yourself, stop. Don't kind of feel you have to do these things. It's fun and people do it because they love it. If you don't, find something else.
Tell us about your favorite Microsoft application or feature. Is there something that you find particularly valuable in your day-to-day work? And I'm going to add like a caveat to this. You cannot pick Copilot.
Oh, that was that. You had to be sucker there. And I was thinking, should I say Copilot? Should I say Copilot on there? which is tricky because the kind of new Copilot voice has come out, and I've been having a lot of fun with that with the kids. So that is quickly becoming one of my favorites within there. And I'm buying time thinking though. The other one, you know, I've mentioned Viva Goals quite a lot. I love that, but I don't use it day in, day out, if I'm honest. Again, I'm getting caught up in the kind of corporate answer and the real answer. So I'm going to go with the real one. It's Visual Studio Code. I love opening up and having a play with a bit of code. I love the simplicity of it, that it's kind of pared back compared with the kind of bloated version that Visual Studio used to be. I just love that you can go in there. You can work on files. My blog runs off markdown files, so I'll go in and edit those and write blogs within there, and I've got spell checks. You can add all sorts of extensions. I'm not a big one for kind of getting the big pretty extensions, but I love the fact they're there. I try them a little bit and most of them haven't particularly stuck, but I've kind of used bits and pieces of those. I love it. It's got GitHub Copilot there, so the reality is I don't do as much coding as I used to do, and GitHub Copilot helps me through that. Now, how do I do a for loop in this language? Because I can remember about four or five different ways, and that helps me through there. And it's all kind of there within VS Code, and it just sits there chugging away nicely. So, if I'm honest, that's the one I love most. I think I know if I'm opening that, I'm kind of descending into a happy place. No PowerPoint presentations, no corporate spiel coming out, just a nice bit of code coming through.
You're actually the first one to mention that as their favorite, and you're also the first one to mention a Viva product as one of your potential favorites. Now, obviously, I've never really been asked a question because I'm always the one asking, but for me, it's actually Viva Engage, which obviously used to be Yammer. I absolutely love it. I love what it can give you as like a forum or a place, what I use within organizations I work with, a place to kind of host a project. You know, I put my videos in there, I put my files in there, but more importantly, it's got the ability for me to announce kind of new updates, but also them to do Q&As. And you can do some of this in Teams and, or, you know, various other stuff, but just something about it that just feels really nice. You can have your banner at the top, and I don't know, it really kind of resonates with me, but I don't actually work with anyone else that uses it.
You know, I was just about to say, the challenge I have with Engage is I find it goes up and down. And when people are using it a lot, I'm 100% with you. It's beautiful. And then people kind of tail off a bit and they stop using it. And it's just rubbish and a pain in the backside because I want to share things and no one's engaging and I get frustrated with it. So it's much like many other social media ones on there, but I love it. And I'd probably say I mentioned Viva probably 18 months ago. I would have said Viva Topics, but Microsoft's killed it and I just cry now.
Kevin, thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of Mastering Mondays. Your passion for digital workspaces and your commitment to helping organizations succeed is inspiring. I'm sure our listeners will think that as well. Thank you very much.